The cat pulled on the dog, and the dog pulled on the girl, and the girl pulled on the wife, and the wife pulled on the husband, and the husband pulled on the turnip, and they pulled, and they pulled, and they pulled, but that turnip would not turn up. The entire village would have gone hungry but for the strength of a ladybug. It seems sometimes everything waits until the smallest in the kingdom joins the fight before justice prevails. And in the meantime, God waits. Good story. But is it true? Truer than we think. When I imagine the story, I imagine the number of places and the number of ways and the number of times this story plays out just like the story describes. Let me give you just two possibilities. In one village, a ladybug possessing the missing muscle loosened the turnip which made the soup which fed the village, and everyone was thrilled. And the story of teamwork inspired the village church to start a food pantry, and the efforts of the church prompted others to begin working for justice, and the inspiration of this work spread, and people came together to care for and educate the children who in turn grew up to build a great nation. And the nation banded together with other nations and ended hunger and disease, all of which occurred while God sat there looking down, slack-jawed and dumbfounded. She rubbed her eyes, not daring to believe that what she had always hoped for was finally coming true right before her. And then seeing that it was true, she smiled, and she put her hands on her big, sturdy hips, and she said, "It's about time." And she blessed it, and she said it was good, and she walked home. Now, in an identical village, about the same time, another ladybug also found a way to loosen the turnip which made the soup which fed the village. And everyone in that village was thrilled as well. And the story made the papers and the village nightly news, which prompted the ladybug to tell everyone how she saved the farm, whereupon she was hired to be the spokesperson for a big agricultural company, which eventually got her a television contract. And her agent helped her promote seminars promising clients a better harvest. And after the ladybug became famous, the church hired her to run the church's food pantry. But when the church food pantry discovered that the ladybug was only a consultant and wasn't actually interested in doing any of the real work, they sued the agent and the agricultural company, which seemed like justice, but it didn't inspire the larger community to help the poor, which didn't change the lives of the children, who didn't grow up to build a great nation, who didn't join with other nations to end hunger and disease, all of which never caught the attention of God, who continued to sit there with her hands on her sturdy hips, waiting. This is a sermon about heroes, about difference makers, those who turn the tides of the world and change the lives of people. It's about those we fantasize about sometimes who will someday walk into our lives and save the day. This is a sermon about power and about glory and understanding how to bring those two together. Three current events come to mind when I think of the topic of heroes, which you may be familiar with and even involved in. First is the arena of sports, and particularly teams vying to win the World Series. The second is the arena of politics and electing the people who help us create a nation of justice. And the third is the arena of this very congregation who, as we speak, we are in the midst of working together to call a minister. Now, in the old days, going back to the 17th century, there was a tradition in the liberal church that on the Sundays before Election Day, preachers would devote their sermons to the topics of politics. And on that day, people from all over the village would come so that they could hear the moral perspective of the current political climate. And for the next 2 hours, that's right, sermons in those days were 2 hours long because preachers would pontificate. And the gist of their sermons was basically this: you're going to hell. And the reason is simple. You're going to hell because of your sins. And everything that's wrong with the world today is wrong because of your hard-headedness and your hard-heartedness. And if you keep it up, you're going to burn forever. So listen up if you want to be saved. Well, people did burn for at least 2 hours, but not much else changed. So you'll be happy to know that I don't plan on going on that long today. And for three reasons in particular. You are not the problem. I am not the answer. And no one here needs saving. Instead, I want to talk about heroes. And I want to start with the World Series. Some of you may know that I am a diehard California Angels fan. And I have been since I was 3 years old. 11 years ago, the California Angels met the San Francisco Giants in the 2002 World Series. It took them 43 years to reach the World Series. When you pledge your loyalty to a team that takes 43 years to get to the World Series, it goes without saying that you end up rooting for some pretty bad teams. I grew up accepting the painful likelihood that the Angels would be statistically eliminated from playoff contention by around the fourth week of the season. Each year, we prayed for a big name to come save us. We prayed for a hero, a giant among players who would lift the team onto his shoulders and carry us on to victory. And bless them, the front office tried, typically signing players in the twilight of their career, like Reggie Jackson and Rod Carew and Nolan Ryan and Mo Vaughn, and most recently, Albert Pujols. But none managed to lift the team out of the cellar, and for years, I and God were left waiting. But in 1985, the Angels brought pitcher Donnie Moore. And Donnie Moore had risen to become a giant among players. In his first year with the Angels, he made the All-Star team, and he recorded 31 saves and became the team's most valuable player. He was awarded a $3 million contract, one of the largest of that time. The Angels that year made the playoffs and in the first round took a 2-game lead in the best of 5 series with the Boston Red Sox. Donnie Moore came into the third game of the American League Championship Series with the Angels one out, one strike away from going to their first ever World Series, and with a one-run lead and a runner on base and two strikes on Dave Henderson, Moore threw a pitch which Henderson launched over the center field wall, a forkball that didn't fork. The Angels lost that game and went back to Boston, where they were outscored 18-5 in the next 2 games. The 1985 Angels found themselves in a familiar place, failing to become the champions that they had always wanted to be. And God found herself in a familiar place, left waiting. But there is more to the story with respect to heroes. The following year, Moore never regained his winning form. He was booed wildly whenever he pitched at home. And Jim Hill, who was the sports writer for the Los Angeles Times, recalled a disquieting incident that summer when a man committed suicide by jumping from the upper deck at Anaheim Stadium, killing himself. Sometime shortly after that, Donnie Moore, in an interview with Jim Hill, said half-jokingly, "He was my last fan." The Angels cut Moore after the 88 season, and he was released by the Kansas City Farm Club in 89. In July of that year, in his Anaheim Hills home, with his children present, Moore shot his wife with a .45 caliber handgun before killing himself. The trouble with giants is that The allure of glory allows for too great a divide to emerge between themselves and the other players on their team. And even when greatness is achieved, it's rarely enough to overcome the effects of that divide. Heroes and giants live with the debilitating perspective that they carry the whole world on their shoulders, assuming all the glory when winning and all the blame when losing. And when a hero fails, there is such a great distance between them and the other players that there's rarely anyone close enough to catch them when they fall. There is another story within the baseball realm that points out the danger of giants, and this one from my own meager career. In Little League, I was a pitcher, one of the best in the league. By the time I had reached my final game of my Little League career, I had pitched 4 one-hitters, but never a no-hitter. My older brother had pitched several, and I thought of him as a giant, the kind of player that I always wanted to be. And in my last Little League game, I had a no-hitter going into the final inning. Not one of those sloppy Little League no-hitters with lots of errors. My team, who I didn't always trust to make the sure outs, much less the hard ones, had played perfectly behind me. And going into the inning, my team was ahead 3-0. I struck out the first batter and then walked one. I struck out the next batter and then struggled with control a little bit and walked the next 2 to load the bases, and that brought up Jeff Gates, the best hitter on their team and one of the best in the league. And in his previous 2 at-bats, he had hit hard shots to our shortstop, Roberto Gonzalez, who was not a particularly sure-handed fielder, but today he made all good plays. And when Gates came to the plate, Roberto was behind me cheering me on. I got 2 strikes on Gates, fastballs that he fouled off, and on an 0-2 count, my catcher, Steve Middleton, was calling for a knuckleball, at that time my best pitch, and I shook him off. I had a vision going through my head of rearing back and throwing the hardest fastball of my life right past Gates, being the hero and single-handedly winning the game. Steve called for the knuckleball again, and I shook him off. He even called timeout and walked out to the mound and pleaded with me in person, and I shook him off face to face and sent him back to the plate, shaking his head. I was determined to be the hero my way. So Steve put down 1 finger, and I gripped the ball, and I reared back, and I threw the hardest pitch I had ever thrown, right down the middle. And Jeff Gates hit it back twice as hard as I threw it, right between my legs and into center field, a clean hit, the end of my no-hitter. At that moment, my countenance fell around my ankles, just like my eyes and my attention, and I stood there wishing that the ball had just hit me in the forehead and killed me right then. Meanwhile, everyone was running around the bases, and the center fielder charged the ball, picked it up, threw home, and got the runner by 5 steps. And we won the game 3-1, my 5th one-hitter. But it didn't matter. In my mind, everything was lost, even though in the team's mind, we'd won. The glory I wanted was personal. I refused the game ball when the manager presented it to me. Tears streamed down my face. I couldn't even look my team in the eye or stop feeling sorry for myself. Sometimes the trouble with giants is they don't understand what it means to be among champions. They're so focused on personal glory instead of shared success. Even in the rare scenario where the team is able to overcome the challenge of playing with a giant among them, who doesn't trust, who doesn't listen, and isn't playing with the same objective, even when they manage to win, they rarely manage to win at all, and never win enough to fill the need of that giant. Teams like this, with giants, are usually watched over by a God accustomed to waiting. I can't help but wonder if what we're seeing now in this country is just another version of this story, government shutdown, ideological gridlock, politicians pontificating, pointing fingers, and spreading blame, while people are out of work, almost out of money, and definitely out of patience. There are so many people pulling, but it's difficult to get any of them to pull in the same direction. And the turnips refused to turn up. 6 years ago, when Obama was running for president, I braced myself for failure. It's true, I had fears that he might lose, but I confess I had more fears that he would win. I feared that all those people who poured all of their energy into his election would pull back once he got elected and become spectators, hoping to watch this newfound giant topple corporate greed and political ideologues single-handedly. There are two simple reasons why almost all giants fall. One is that they overestimate their power and influence and overextend themselves. But the other is that the people around that giant underestimate their power and influence and reduce their participation. And rarely does one come without the other. This tendency of ours to push a giant to the fore and then resent him for failing to save us is alluring and prevalent. And almost every village in this world has a story like that. But it doesn't have to be this way. What's required for change is to listen carefully to those key moments where giants actually ask for and invite cooperation, and then step up and give it to them. In this light, I want to recall for us an excerpt of President Obama's acceptance speech on the night he was elected. "I don't believe that you did all of this work for me to win," he said. "You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring. We know there are brave Americans in the deserts of Iraq and the mountains of Afghanistan who risk their lives every day for us. There are mothers and fathers who lie awake after their children fall asleep and wonder how they'll pay the mortgage or meet their doctor's bills or even save enough for college. There is new energy to harness. There are new jobs to be created. There are new schools to be built, threats to meet, and alliances to repair. The road will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term, but America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you that we as a people will get there. We as a people will get there." That is not the typical language of giants. Giants talk about I and me and mine. It is angels who talk about we. In 2002, the California Angels defeated Barry Bonds and the San Francisco Giants to win the World Series. They won because every angel showed up and pulled in the same direction. There were no marquee players, there were no heroes, no giants. Only a commitment by each for all to reach a common goal, and a vision that such a common goal could rise above any individual purpose. There is a story of a boy and his father who were walking along a road, and they came across a large stone which blocked their path. And the boy said to his father, "Do you think if I used all my strength, I could move that rock?" And his father answered, "If you use all your strength, I am sure you can do it." And so the boy walked over and leaned over the rock, easily as big as he was, and he began to push. And he pushed his body against the rock, scraping his little feet on the ground till his face turned red and his little grunts turned to a sigh. But the rock did not budge. Discouraged, he turned and spoke defiantly to his father. "You were wrong, father. I can't move the rock. Even with all my strength, I failed." "You failed," returned his father, "because you didn't use all your strength." And then a sudden surge of resentment welled up in the boy, but before he could protest, his father stopped him. "You didn't use all your strength," he said, "because you didn't ask for my help." And with that, the father walked over to the rock and invited his son to take a place next to him, and together they pushed it out of the way. A quick word about what we're doing here in this congregation. We are not trying to call a giant of a minister, not a hero, not someone who will save the day. If you don't want to find yourself years from now in an all too familiar scenario of this world where everyone feels discouraged and is sure that the other side didn't live up to their promises and is to blame, there are three basic rules to follow. One party is not the problem, the other party is not the answer, and there is no one here that needs saving. So everyone, all of us together, need to make sure to do everything possible so that this is the kind of congregation that a great team player will want to come to. God has been waiting for a very long time for people to work together. How long will we keep God waiting? Until we realize that the real goal is not electing a president, but working for justice. The real goal is not in making soup, but in ending hunger. And the real goal is not finding a minister, but building a safe community for seeking and service. I believe that God will wait as long as it takes for us to stop relying on giants to do the work of angels. She will wait for that time when we as a people become like angels, and like angels discover that we can fly because we learn how to take ourselves lightly. And like angels, we work not for personal glory, but for the glory of life.